Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host, Gwyn Sheltema, and our guest this week, Peter Lockyer, filmmaker, historian, and preserver of our heritage. So, Peter, in 2004, you set up this company, History Lives Here, Inc. Tell us what the purpose of the company is and how it's developed since you set it up.
Well, it was just my experience in going around and working as a volunteer and advisor to lots of nonprofit charitable groups in my community, that they often experience the same problems. It was like, okay, we have a project, we need a grant. Okay, well, who's going to write the grant?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
oh, I see.
Where will we write the grant to? And how much money do we need? And who's going to do all the work and all of that sort of stuff? And they had issues around marketing and all kinds of event organizing. So what I did was reach out to people that I've worked with for and known for 30 years. Many of them go back to my CBC days, and said, why don't we form a little cooperative company here, and we will assist nonprofits in doing this sort of work. So we started out of that kind of general thought of, well, we'll just do some of these things. So we've been involved in all kinds of events in Prince Edward County that raise money for a wide range of worthy causes, mostly in the heritage area. One of the things we did was take an old play I was mentioning earlier in section one of the interview about this famous trial we had in 1884, and we took over the old courthouse, which is largely unchanged in Picton. The only thing different about it is that they put in a sound system, but it looks the same as it did in 1884, and the gallows are still there, and the cells where these men stayed are still there. So we took that over one Friday afternoon. And we had a local fellow who's from Picton. He's a judge, actually, with the Ontario Court of Appeal. He'd written a book about this Lazier murder case, and he made it into a play. He got a bunch of his legal buddies to play all the parts. We had some local actors do that, and we put on the play again. My son played one of the accused men, and I told him, you better get your lines right or we're going to do the hanging again, you know, today. So fortunately, everything went well. But that was an outstanding success. We raised $20,000 in an afternoon.
Oh, my goodness.
Around doing that. And the particular cause in that case was to make a bronze sculpture of John A. McDonald, which you can see on the main street in Picton to this day. It was 2015 was the 200th anniversary of his birth. So to celebrate that and his early days in Picton, most people don't realize that John A. McDonald actually had his first court case in Picton in October of 1834 at the courthouse.
Yeah.
He also hung around. He was kind of a brash teenager at that time. But he sort of learned the legal trade in Picton before moving on to Kingston, where his political career began. So we wanted to create a bronze sculpture of him commemorating his very first court case in Picton in 1834, and that's why we took over the courthouse to raise the money for this bronze sculpture. So we've been part of all kinds of different events in our community, which were to celebrate in a kind of novel, creative way the whole matter of the history that we have, awaken the community to the history we have, and at the same time raise money for worthy heritage causes.
Your history moments, you've made seven series of them now, with 10 or 12 stories in each. So do they always center on a building or a special place?
We have some practical parameters around them. Sometimes stories go so far back in history that they predate photography or there's no artifacts, no evidence of them, so that's kind of difficult to tell visually. We're also interested in stories that aren't just locally interesting, but they have national and international dimensions to them. And so we need visuals to go with all of this. But usually we have found those things, and it's just a matter of time. The material is somewhere in museums or collections, and we're often in the Ontario Archives or the National Archives in Ottawa, or using local archives to track down particular things we need. So the stuff is around. It just takes a little time to get it. But essentially, those are the parameters. We want a story that is a gripping tale that has national and international implications.
Right, and each series will have a sort of particular area that it's taking the stories from?
No. As we've done this, the fact is I only started it in 2009 to do it once. I just thought it was something, okay, we'll do this once to raise some money for the cemetery. they were such a hit with the community that we said, okay, we'll do another one. But there was no business plan to this that we would carry on. It's been sort of organic. And then we moved over into Belleville and started to do Belleville and Hastings County stories. We've probably done about 15 different stories from there. Mm-hmm. Last year we were working with Quinte West and doing some stories from there. So now we're starting to deal with communities all across eastern Ontario. A story I wanted to do for the last couple of years, because one of the colleagues that I have in this, he lives just north of Cornwall, and I was visiting him, and he said to me, do you know that Simon Fraser, the explorer, lives just down the road from me, or is buried down the road from me? And I couldn't believe that Simon Fraser, you know, the man that discovered the Fraser River, and right. Simon Fraser University is named after, was just north of Cornwall in a small little cemetery. So we went and visited that site. So this year we hope to tell the story of Simon Fraser. And buried right next to him is another John MacDonald. But this guy's not the father of Confederation, but he was Ontario's first premier. So you can see I have this thing about cemeteries. Whenever I go to cemeteries, I run into a whole bunch of stories that I want to tell. And they're right there. So there are lots of stories everywhere.
What about a history moment about Simon Fraser? Will it extend to a history minute? Or do you still keep the principle? Because you could make a whole feature about Simon Fraser.
But every one of these people and events that we do could easily be a half an hour documentary.
Yeah,
and on two occasions, we have done that.
Oh, you have?
And they're both stories that resonated deeply with me because they go back to my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a teenager, I used to go on Friday nights during the winter to the Belleville Memorial Arena to watch the Belleville McFarlands play hockey. Yeah. And the Belleville McFarlands were a senior A team, but they were really semi-pro guys. Mm-hmm. Their goaltender, Gordy Bell, had played the year before on the New York Rangers in the Stanley Cup playoffs, so these were very high-end hockey players. And the games in the Memorial Arena, by the third period, you could barely see the ice because everybody smoked in those days. So it would be this sort of purple haze over the whole place. But nonetheless, the hockey was so great. So in 2009, that was the 50th anniversary of their win in Prague, Czechoslovakia, in 1959. So we recreated the parade that welcomed the team back. We did a documentary and a book about them, and we held a special gala evening to celebrate their achievement. And we also did that once more with another story from my childhood, which was about the days when the legendary raceboat Miss Supertest 3 ran in the waters off of Picton. This was a sort of a 45-foot raceboat. It would go 200 miles an hour on the water.
Wow.
And these races would take place in Picton, where Miss Supertest, the only Canadian competitor, would go up against these American teams. And Miss Supertest was unstoppable, unbeatable. So everybody of my vintage remembers these races. So in 2011, that was the 50th anniversary of the last race of that boat in Picton. We brought the boat back, we recreated the event, and it was a huge success. And we did a documentary as part of that.
Wonderful, wonderful. You can't stop telling stories, can you?
Well, how much time do we have?
We've got to draw it to a close, unfortunately. But before we let you go, the 225th anniversary is being celebrated this year.
That's right.
So tell us a tiny bit about that.
Well, Prince Edward County is one of the counties that somehow has retained itself, perhaps because it's a separate, contained island community. It's retained this name that it originally have, Prince Edward. And so it goes back 225 years ago where we got this name, and we've kept that name. And this year, it just sort of coincides with Canada's 150th and Ontario's 150th. So we're rolling it in all together to bring back these stories and events and times that were part of our community.
Right. So would you like to finish up by telling us one more one-minute story?
I'm going to tell a story about two teenage sisters from a little village called Consecon in Prince Edward County.
Yeah.
And these two sisters went with their father, who was a blacksmith, and they ended up moving to New York. And they didn't really want to be in New York. And this it was out in New York State, not the city of New York. Their dad was a blacksmith, and they weren't very happy about this. So they played some tricks on their parents and said the house was spooked. They would you know, have apples dropping down the stairs and stuff like that. And they were so convincing at this that their parents were really feeling, this house is haunted that we're living in. And they got the neighbors involved, and they said, oh my God, this is really haunted as well. And then they got journalists involved, and pretty soon, these two young girls, 15 and 16, Maggie and Katie Fox, were doing seances and all kinds of things at $150 a night in the 1850s and 60s, because they resonated with the times. Most American families had endured losses at that time. People died. They led short, hard lives. Women often died in childbirth. There were so many unexplained diseases that everybody was going through mourning. So the fact that these two young women, who were viewed as signs of purity and maybe they could connect with the afterlife, it really caught on. It was a big thing. And they're, to this day, known and remembered as the founders of the spiritualist movement in America. Now, they had a trick. They could snap their toes like you and I can snap our fingers, and these would resonate on hardwood floors and make this sort of rapping sound. So they were known as rappers, but they were so good at this, nobody could ever catch them. And I think they had a certain clairvoyant talent as well. But they really took off. They were big deals. And then
did they ever get back to Prince Edward County?
They never did, except they did visit at one time with Susanna Moody, the author from Belleville,
yeah, yeah,
who was also into the spiritual world as well. So these were two people who led incredible lives. The end of their lives were kind of sad because they were denounced as frauds, and they were tricksters in a way, although gifted, I think. So they kind of died lonely, sad deaths. They weren't considered respectable by society at that point in time. However, they did do something extraordinary, and they should be remembered.
They do seem to have been extraordinary, don't they? Well, we've been talking with filmmaker, historian, and journalist Peter Lockyer. So where can people find out more about your work, Peter?
Well, probably the easiest thing is just to go to our website, which is www.historylivesheere.ca, historylivesheere.ca, and many of the stories are posted on that site, and there's a contact us, of course, and I'm not very good at this, but I do try to post stuff on there from time to time.
Yes.
But my editor is always after me. She says, you're not very consistent at this. But they'll find lots of history stories and lots of other things on the site, so I would encourage people to go there.
Can they watch videos of some of those history moments?
Yes, they can.
Rather, if they don't have access to the radios, television stations.
Yep. No, we posted in early years, we used to post the entire series on there, so they can go through there and just select series one, series two,
yeah,
series three. So there are quite a number of stories on the site.
Mm-hmm. Good. And listeners, if you would like to connect with us and make comments, queries, or suggestions for whom we might interview in future programs, please leave your comment at our website, wordonthehills.com. And if you've missed a program or would like to listen to one again, you'll find all our broadcasts archived at the website too. You can listen to them anytime and from anywhere. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week, right here on Word on the Hills, Sunday at 1, repeated Thursdays at 1 a.m., on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.